Strachan and Bell together. There's Cooper breaking through. A chance now, this will be the fourth goal for Aberdeen. And Cooper puts it in with just behind his belly. Well, suddenly it's become a rout.
Of course, when things are going wrong against you, you don't get the breaks of the ball. Cooper in with Stewart. He didn't really know where the ball was, but he got the break. And as you say, it's a schoolboy's dream, being able to take your time, knowing that really all you got to do is crack it into the back of the net.
Hello and welcome to Stand Free, the Aberdeen FC Women's Podcast. We are back once again after a few months hiatus to look back at how things are currently going with all things Aberdeen FC Women, and who better to join me in order to discuss those topics than Sophie Goodwin, sports journalist with The Preston Journal and The Evening Express. Sophie, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I am very well, or as well as can be expected in a fortnight where, as much as we all enjoy international football, a fortnight when there is neither a men's nor women's game in the meantime is always something you have to just endure and get to the other side on. So Aberdeen women's team at the moment, we have just had the post split for the SWPL. Aberdeen ended up in the bottom six of those teams. However, as that now splits into groups A and group B, if we're looking at that on the positive side of things, Aberdeen are now currently in that regard top of group B. So the split now has Aberdeen facing Motherwell, Montrose, Spartans, Dundee United and Hamilton. They will be playing each of those teams home and away in the second part of the season. The first of those games had already taken place the previous weekend with a home game against Spartans. A team that, although in terms of league form they've been fairly struggling, they only have 13 points this season, but I don't think that's necessarily been reflective of the way that they played this season. They'd also recently knocked Aberdeen out of the Scottish Cup in a game about a month ago in Edinburgh, so I don't think anyone was taking anything for granted. But after maybe something of a sticky start, Sophie, they managed to get their post-split set of fixtures off to a successful start with a very good win.
Yeah, I think once Spartans are a weird team in that you don't know what you're going to get from them, but at the same time you kind of do, in that they've got players like Becky Galbraith, who I think has scored almost, other than the last game, almost every time she's played against Aberdeen in the last couple of seasons. And a lot of people like Alana Marshall, a really experienced player, and they've got a lot of kind of young talent coming through as well. So kind of know where they can hurt you, but in terms of, like you say, they've had a change of manager this season, they've been struggling, you don't quite know how they're going to click, and I just don't think they did in that game. But I think Aberdeen started, like you say, it was a pretty even, and then I think Aberdeen were fairly comfortable for the rest of the match. But I think it was really important that they started that split with a win. I think, the aim kind of has to be to be best of the rest, and there's no reason why Aberdeen, I think Spartans did it last season, I think they went unbeaten. They missed out on a place in the top six on the last day before the league split, and they kind of used that to their advantage and then went unbeaten for the entire split and, finished on really decent points tally. So there's no reason why Aberdeen can't do that this season. So I think, yeah, a really good win against, a decent Spartan side in terms of the players that they've got and kind of where you know that they can hurt you. So yeah, like you say, a good win and a good way to start the spot on a positive note.
Yeah, in terms of that win, maybe starting with the two goal scorers, because I think in many respects they've been two of the major success stories for Aberdeen throughout the season. Bailey Hutchison opening the scoring with really one of those solo contributions from maybe solo is a bit unfair. I think the move started out with a really good bit of pressing work from the ever reliable Ailey Shore in the middle of the park, which managed to see us turn possession over in the middle of the park. And I think it was one of the new signings who we'll talk about later on, Adele Lindbeck, who released Bailey rather down the left hand flank. But it was really everything to do from there, and basically she just used her pace to go round the outside of the defender into the box, and another of her classic composed finishes. And I think I'm right in saying that was goal number 18 of the season for Bailey Hutchison. And in some respects, it's a fantastic achievement, but in another regard, it's just what she does.
Yeah, I think that goal kind of typified what you get from Bailey. Like you say, kind of once she's got the ball, you wouldn't bet against her to beat her man, to, like say, compose finish. That's what she does best. And yeah, 18 goals for the season across all competitions, and I think that was her 17th in the league, her best tally in the league since she's played in the top flight with Aberdeen. So, you know, season upon season, Bailey's scored goals. Even, you know, it took her some time last season. I think it took her a couple of months to kind of get her first league goal, but even then, I think she still hit double figures. I think it was 14 in her first season. So I think she's still only 20, or she's 21. So, you know, the fact that she's scoring goals season upon season in this league, and a team that, you know, in comparison to some of the other teams in this league, don't score... Aberdeen do score goals, but you look at kind of the goals for the likes of Rangers, Celtic, Glasgow City, kind of that's off the scale compared to Aberdeen. But, you know, she's, I think, sitting third or fourth in the goal scoring charts for the league with players from those teams, you know, Rio Hardy, Rachel Rowe, I think Kate Lockwood at Hearts is in there as well. So, you know, she's proven season upon season that she can score goals in this league. And I think the one thing that we've seen from Bailey is that, you know, this season especially, I think that different kinds of goals she's offered a wee bit more. I think that's come from working with Clint, different kinds of oppositions she scored against. I think that's something that she'd probably like to do more in, that scoring against kind of the so-called big teams. But this season she's scored against I think Glasgow City, I think she's scored against Rangers, I think down the road. So she's kind of proven at such a young age that you can rely on her as a striker, and that's probably quite difficult, you know. I think she scored, Hannah Shirt scored, that you mentioned, she scored the other goal in that game from the penalty spot against Spartans. But season upon season, Bailey has had to be the kind of the main provider of goals, and for somebody so young and played in this league, it's probably quite a task, and probably quite a weight to have on her shoulders. But I think she embraces that, and, you know, there are spells where she maybe doesn't score or whatever, but the fact that she's likely to get a 20 goal season, especially this season where, you know, it has been quite difficult, even though that they're sitting pretty decent in seventh. It's been difficult in terms of, you know, the squad depth just wasn't there, so these players had to really kind of grind out the minutes up until Christmas, when they were able to bring in four players. So, yeah, I think she's a proven striker at this level, and I think she's just that goal against Spartans, I think, typified that, the fact it was her 17th goal in the league this season, and the kind of the manner of the goal as well.
Absolutely, and you've obviously touched upon how young Bailey still is. You're absolutely right, still just 20 years old. But obviously in a squad which is a very young squad generally, but to be not only kicking on, I mean, it's not just obviously what she's achieving in terms of the amount of goals that she's scoring for Aberdeen, but you're absolutely right as well. She's scoring against, you know, every level of opposition within the SWPL, and she's one of the top scorers in general in the league, and it maybe is still a little too early to be speaking about her in these kind of terms, but one of the things I'm always conscious of is there has been and continues to be an awful lot of international recognition amongst the players that we have in the squad throughout the youth levels, but Do you think there's a realistic prospect that Bailey might go on to be the first to actually makes it into the full international side and gets that full international recognition?
I wouldn't rule it out. I think there's a lot of factors. I think, you know, we've seen it since Pedro's come in that he has called up a few young ones from, you know, mostly the professional teams, Celtic, Rangers, Glasgow City, a couple from Hearts have been called up during his time as well. And I think he's mentioned it as well, that one, you know, it depends on the players' club environments, so how professional that is, what the resources are, what the facilities are, what their schedule looks like, kind of that plays a part in whether he thinks that they can make the step up and then whether they can make the step up. I think he referenced Leah Eddy the last time that she, during the Pinatar Cup, which was just back in February there, that she kind of has been called up before, but this time round you really noticed that it was more of a seamless transition for her, whereas I think the level to international football, the progress that's been made and kind of the leaps and bounds that, you know, the women's game in Europe has made would make that transition very, very difficult for somebody like Bailey. I think Albion have made a lot of progress kind of, you know, off the pitch in recent seasons. Bailey's obviously one of the players, one of the first players who got put on a semi-professional contract. They've now got a full-time manager in Clint, but as in the club and it's where it is just now, even though progress has been made, I think a lot more would have to be done for her to kind of be looked at by Pedro. Not to say that she's not being looked at, but in terms of like to be called up and to be realistically get minutes, I think, you know, there's a lot of progress that still needs to be done kind of in that regard. Not that she's not capable, you know, the foundations are there, but I think Bailey's best chance is to, we obviously have an under-23s now that's she had missed out on the last camp due to having uni exams, but and she was in the first camp, but I think she missed the game because she was ill. So that's her best kind of route, is to kind of prove herself there. And, you know, if Aberdeen, you know, they've mentioned about having a 5-year plan, if they can really kick on with that and kind of make a more professional, a full-time environment even, that would give kind of Bailey the best chance, I think, to get a look in at senior level with Scotland.
Yeah, so as we were discussing earlier, the other goal scorer against Spartans is the other player that I want to spend a little bit more time on, Hannah Stewart, because that has been a development for her, not just in terms of her contributions on the pitch, but after Nadine Hansen dropped out of playing in the first team with her now expecting her next child, it then meant that the captain's armband fell to Hannah. And in some situations, the added responsibility that goes along with putting the captain's armband on can often have an impact in the negative sense in relation to having that additional responsibility on your shoulders. But from what I've seen in that time since, if anything, it's just served to spur her on. She is very clearly one of a very select few players within the squad who have that kind of significant number of years of experience in the team. And that added responsibility just seems to have really suited her right down to the ground. And if anything, she's actually produced some of her best football in the team over the last few months.
I think so. I think, you know, Hannah joined, this is her third season back at Aberdeen. She was obviously part of the squad when it was Aberdeen Ladies, but I think she didn't get much game time her first season, kind of had to bide her time a wee bit last season, but she's really kind of, you know, come into her own a wee bit in the squad this season. I think she kind of really understands what her role was even before she took on the captaincy. She was obviously one of the more senior teams in such a young squad, and that experience playing for Glasgow City, playing for Forfar Farman, really helped helped Hannah. She's got good runs at the start of the season. She's got good assists, and Hannah's so hard working. I think, you know, you'll see yourself when you're at games, is that she'll play anywhere on the park. I think she's played across the whole forward line. She'll not stop the whole game. I think she's a very similar captain as well to Lauren Campbell, who's obviously captain last season. She's quite quiet on the pitch. She's maybe not the most vocal, but I think, you know, she kind of takes charge of the team in terms of in those tough moments. Kind of, you see her kind of making wee comments, even just speaking to the referee and things like that. She's really quite passionate, and I think that comes across. But I think you're right. I think she's really found what her role is at this season under Clint, and I think it was no surprise that she got the captaincy under Nadine. I think she has shown leadership, albeit it's not the most vocal, it's not the most kind of you know, I think you kind of compare her sometimes on the pitch to Ailie Shore, and Ailie Shore is really quite vocal. She's, and that's something quite new for her as well in terms of, I think it was down at, I think it was maybe down at Motherwell actually when they won, was it 5-1? And I think she just said something to Eva Thompson, and it wasn't quite work, and then it worked, and she just kind of took her sounds like that's it, and it was just really encouraging. Hannah does that, but in a different kind of way. I think, and they complement each other quite well, I think. But yeah, Hannah's, you know, this is our best season in terms of minutes, goals and assists since coming back to Aberdeen, and now she's got the captaincy as well. So I think, yeah, it's all kind of clicked for her this season, I think, under Clint.
Yeah, and it's maybe a good opportunity before we move on to discuss maybe some of the newer players that, in the grand scheme of things, it's a new manager as well, because it's been the first season under Clint Lancaster. We had the chance to speak to him on this podcast earlier in the season. Very much been taken when you're talking about maybe who may or may not be vocal people on the pitch. I don't know if there's any doubt that he's vocal from the touchlines. It maybe took him a few games or two to settle into the game in Scotland, but maybe also just I think he had to learn by way of a yellow card or two earlier on in his campaign to just to be aware of maybe not being too vocal or straying too far out of his touchline. But it's definitely been very noticeable to me that the one thing that he has brought in relation to his coaching style is he is, in a positive way, very vocal with the players. He obviously has a very clear idea of the structure he's wanted his team to play throughout the season, how he's wanted his players to approach that. He's often very vocal and looking to make positional changes, or if he's looking to have the team press further forward. And I think there's been very noticeable positive aspects around that as well. How have you found his first season in charge?
I think you've hit kind of the nail on the head. I think anytime anyone asks me that, I think this season it's been really clear on what I really want to do on the pitch. I think maybe before that's not been so clear, whether it was a case of the players finding their feet. You know, we mentioned that they're a young squad, and we mentioned players like Bailey, who, you know, fair enough, she's done it season upon season, but she's also kind of been learning on the job a wee bit as well. And I think Clint coming in, obviously being full time and with the experience that he's got in the women's game and in, you know, across the boys' game and the youth side of things, I think his kind of coaching style and his expertise has really benefited them in terms of, you know, I imagine the work that they've put in and that he puts in when the girls aren't in training. It's benefited all parties really. So I think, yeah, he's stuck to his guns. It's quite clear what he wants to do. I think he's really passionate. I think, you know, it's not been easy for him. I think, you know, mentioned earlier that the squad depth wasn't really there the first half of the season. He came in quite late before the season, was only really able to bring in two players of his own, two of which have now, you know, have been out for the season, have been out since was it September time? They both got injured in the same game. I think they only played 7 games each. So it you know, that didn't help him, and he was having to bring up players from the under-18s who have done well, but, you know, it's a lot to kind of rely on them at such a kind of pivotal time in their career, their first exposure to senior football, and they're getting thrown to the mix against, you know, Celtic, Glasgow City and things. So I think, but he's never strayed from what he wants to do. He wants to play it from the back. He wants to play fast, passing football. And I think, you know, that's always been there. And yeah, his style is obviously quite vocal on the touchline, but I think that's a good thing. Fair enough, it's come with a few yellow cards and a couple. He's been in the stands for a couple of games now this season, but, you know, it just kind of shows you how much he cares. And yeah, I think it's been a good addition to the team, and I think he's been a good addition to the league as well.
You've mentioned a particular situation, because I was going to then speak about some of the players that have come into the club since the new year, but obviously before that, you touched upon a couple of players that were actually brought in towards the beginning of this season, and that was goalkeeper Faye Kirby, who had came in on loan from Liverpool, and Laura Holden. And it was, I think, last October that they were both involved in the same game, where both of them were lost essentially for the rest of the season, and both to ACL injuries. And it's obviously something that for a number of seasons has been spoken about in relation to what seems to be an incredibly large number of ACL injuries, which are specifically hitting more regularly amongst players in the women's game than it is in the men's game. And that's actually something last November that you undertook an investigation into as part of your work with the Press and Journal. I know you had a chance to speak to Laura Holden specifically in relation to her experience with that, together with a number of other players, and I just wondered whether that might be something you wanted to speak about in a bit further detail, and what you found from that.
Yeah, I think, you know, like you say, it's kind of an injury that's really rife within the women's game at the minute. I think a lot of people look at it from a perspective of why is it happening, you know, what's the research, what can be done to stop it happening, and I think obviously that is really important, but that's a kind of viewpoint that we all know why we need to kind of, more research needs to be done, whether that's down to, you know, kind of an anatomy side of things, the difference between men and women, whether that's scheduling, whether that's resource facility wise, there's so many different factors and that's where the research needs to go into. But in terms of our project, I think, you know, I kind of felt it was really important to kind of touch on the human side of things and hear about from the players themselves rather than the actual injury, but kind of more about how it affected them in terms of, you know, I spoke to somebody like Rachel Boyle, who's obviously down at Hibs, who's, you know, however many times Scotland capped international. Spoke to Laura, who obviously had moved up from down south to Aberdeen to kind of sign her first ever paid contract. Spoke to Karen Mason, who is the Inverness Cali Thistle women's manager. She played for Inverness City when that was what the club was called back in the day. And she's a PE teacher, so she spoke of how this injury in football kind of affected everything away from football as well. You know, she could barely do her job, the kind of quality of life that she had because of it. And I spoke to two players who play for Huntley, one who has since recovered, who did her ACL about 5 years ago, and one who is a 17-year-old and had only just done it and had, you know, had one GP appointment because she was on the waiting list to get her scans and things. So many different kind of factors, and people are just affected in so many different ways, whether it be their job, their kind of mental health. You know, Laura specifically mentioned how important it was for her at Aberdeen. Obviously, she'd moved up from the south of England for her to kind of be around the team all the time, and how that has kind of helped her get through it and just being part of the team, getting to not do it on her own, essentially, the rehab and the recovery. And I know that she's making good progress. She's off the crutches now. She's being able to get back driving. So it's just little things that maybe people don't think about. I think Emma Hayes, you know, who's obviously the manager at Chelsea, speaks about it quite good, and that any time it happens, it's obviously high profile. Chelsea's got, you know, Sam Kerr out at the minute. When she was asked about it, I think it's really important, and this is what she hammers home, is that you kind of look at the player behind the injury. Like, we understand that, you know, that they're another statistic, they're another high profile name, but this is somebody who's not going to get to play the sport for the best part of a year. Or, you know, in some place, some players' cases, if they're amateur, if they're grassroots, it could be two years plus by the time they get back. So that was really important for me, is that we kind of touched on the human interest and let the players tell their stories, but also providing a kind of different perspective as well of, you know, kind of we spoke to a physio and find out, like, what makes it so bad, and so you can actually understand that it's not just a case of, you know, a football injury, what a shame, you'll get back playing at some point. Like, it's the pain of the kind of injury itself and the trauma of that, but also the rehab process of, like, all the steps and all the goals you have to hit, all the kind of milestones and all the setbacks that you might face. So it felt quite all-encompassing. We kind of covered everything in terms of the injury and what it is and, you know, the reasons behind it. But yeah, for me, like I said, is the main bit was to kind of get the human interest beside it and let the players tell their own stories, really.
Yeah, I mean, some of the findings that have been coming out, especially in recent times, it was reported last month in relation to the impact that's had on the women's game and particularly at the professional level in comparison to what it is with the men's. It was reported by Sky Sports last month within football-focused studies that suggested women were six times more likely to suffer an ACL injury compared to men. but were also 25% less likely to make a full return, which is pretty staggering information to be confronted with, and especially with, as you've obviously detailed, you know, not just how likely it is to make a return, but even if you do make a full return, you could be looking seasons down the line before you're in a position to pick your career up again from where it once was. Are there other aspects that you think should be getting done better specifically within the women's game? I know that one of the things that is finally being looked at in more detail now is the equipment. Is it historically just even something as simple as the design and shape of football boots have for decades really been focused and molded on the shape of men's feet rather than women's feet, and not only just that but the simple differences in male and female biology in relation to how men and women run and their respective gaits, and how much that might have an impact on the players and their muscles. Do you think there is further scientific advancement or just even simple approaches to what equipment is made available to women in future?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think, you know, it's important to remember that football has kind of always been looked at from a men's perspective in terms of, you know, like, say, boots, kind of facility-wise, everything has been through a men's lens because it's been designed to be played and watched by men. You know, women's football in this country was obviously banned for 50 years, so we're kind of 50 years behind the curve, I guess. We've never had to kind of think of it as a... from a women's perspective, and now the game is coming along leaps and bounds, and it's professional, it's, you know, the quality is the best it's ever been, and it's kind of now we're being confronted with these issues that we've never really been confronted with before. I think, you know, boots is one factor in terms of, yeah, the kind of the way that the studs sit, the way that the kind of the boots fit in itself in terms of jumping and changing direction, that plays a big part. But I remember we have the P&J and the Evening Express, Rachel Corsi is our columnist, and when Miedema, so this was quite some time now, I think it was after when Miedema did her ACL when she was playing for Arsenal, we spoke about how maybe a key factor is in the women's game, you know, when you're an academy player and you're a young boy and you're in the men's game, you have S&C, you have that kind of training, level of training from when you're like, what, under 10s, under 12s, like that kind of exposure to different kind of training, you don't get that, or players of a certain generation didn't get that, and only now you're kind of starting to see it at girls' academy. So it's even stuff like that, like how much of a difference does that make in terms of, you know, I think she spoke about how it wasn't until she was down at Glasgow City or even down at Notts County when she was a professional for the first time that she kind of got that level of training. And, you know, this is somebody who's gone on to play at the highest level of the game throughout her career and is obviously Scotland captain as well. So it's things like that. I think, you know, like I say, we have never really thought of the women's game being and taking women into account in the way we kind of plan things, plan resources, facilities, sessions, whatever. And I think now that is starting to come into it, and I think as time goes on, this kind of what can we do to be different will not need to be discussed, because we'll know in that, we'll know all this, not all the stuff, obviously we can always find out more, but we'll understand. I think that's just now, we don't quite understand why it's happening, but I think within time, as the women's game maybe catches up a wee bit, we'll kind of come to understand, and there'll be some answers, hopefully.
Yeah, and you'd have to hope, exactly as you said, as the standard and popularity of the women's game grows and there's a lot more emphasis on that, that will hopefully shine more of a light on these issues than has already been shone before, and we're hopefully looking at a chance of further understanding what needs to be done in order to address issues like that. In relation to how it's impacted on Aberdeen FC women specifically, obviously there's always been an issue over the last few seasons with regards to squad depth and the ability to be able to bear injuries to players throughout the course of the season. Then, of course, you know, we're barely a month or two into the season, and a double ACL blow, obviously devastating for the two players individually, but for the team, a tight squad is suddenly all the more threadbare. And I think it is probably fair to say that that was a time where the squad did struggle for a couple of months just to, in order to kind of keep that momentum going with the players that they had available until they got a chance in the new year to bolster the numbers. And they did that very effectively, I think, over the piece. There was three players that came in at the beginning of the year, and probably the most impactful of those, in my opinion, again going back to the most recent game against Spartans, Jenny Curry, the goalkeeper. She was actually named in the SWPL Team of the Week, and I think she's been an incredibly steadying influence at the heart of the defence for the team, notwithstanding the fact that she's obviously an incredibly good goalkeeper. And the other thing to maybe say is, again, that's not necessarily to take anything away from Annalise McCann, who'd been doing very well in that interim period between losing Faye Kirby, and indeed before Faye Kirby came to the club, before Jen Curry came in. And in fact, it's also probably worth noting that while Jenny was putting in a Team of the Week performance and a clean sheet, Annalise, at very, very short notice, was called in as an emergency loan to Dundee United. So she found herself going down the A90 to Montrose to play in that game. And she actually kept a clean sheet for 90 minutes as well. And it looked like she was going to get it for the whole game, but was just foiled in injury time in that game. So in a squad where we've been very lucky to actually have a few very capable goalkeepers in the team, but Jenny in particular has had, to my mind, an outstanding season so far since she's came.
Yeah, I think it is really important to mention Annalisa. Over, you know, last season, it's almost kind of, I imagine she's had a serious case of deja vu, and that she was kind of called up just due to factors. Last season, AJ Meach left. I think she maybe left about October, November time. It was about the same time that Emma Hunter and Gavin Beath left. Annalisa became the kind of de facto number one. There was no competition. And then, obviously, kind of Faye came in the summer. Somebody who I think Annalisa could, you know, and did learn a lot from. Obviously, Faye's, she wasn't, I think she was only 21, but not the most senior player, but the experience that she kind of has had, and the fact that she's come through the ranks, WSL teams, played, had five senior appearances for Liverpool against the likes of Chelsea, had played, you know, I think she was player of the match against Chelsea last season. So just to kind of learn from her and her background, and that they could kind of train together, which she didn't have last season, would be really important. And then again, Faye gets injured, and like last season, Annalisa finds herself facto number one again. And I think for somebody so young to have kind of been thrown into that situation, probably when they weren't quite ready for it, I think she did do a good job. You know, yes, there was maybe mistakes. Yes, there was, I think, over that period where she played, that, you know, there were, the number of goals conceded weren't ideal, but also all the other kind of factors. I think you kind of have to take your hat off to Annalisa, and that she stepped up when she had to, and where Aberdeen would have been without her, I don't know. But yeah, I think since Jen's come in, I think she's done really well. Can't say I'm surprised. She's a goalkeeper who's really experienced in age, and in this league, having played at kind of Hamilton and Hearts in recent seasons, and she played for Hibs before, she's played in Bulgaria, she's played in Northern Ireland as well. So she has plenty of experience, I think, and which is one really important in such a young team, especially a young defence. You know, she's got people like Maddie Finney playing in front of her, Amy Black, Jess Broderick's obviously come back. She's still very young. Chloe Gober, who, although she's a bit older and has more experience, this is her first season playing in the back line. So a really good addition. I think, you know, her shot stopping has been excellent, showed that in the Spartans game as well. So I think, yeah, she's been a good addition. I think it was probably the most priority area for Aberdeen in the transfer windows, that they had to get a goalkeeper in. Like I said, kind of the competition, you know, for somebody like Annalisa, who's, what, 18, to have no competition, to know that you're going to play every week, no matter kind of your performance, I can't imagine that does much for your kind of motivation and your, I don't know, your kind of ambition as a goalkeeper, as a player, and kind of it's a lonely position anyway. So I imagine that maybe when you're not going so well and performances haven't been great, and like you mentioned, that kind of period after losing the two players at injury, it got quite tough for Aberdeen, and they went on a bit of a run where, you know, there was quite heavy defeats. If you're a goalkeeper who's got no competition, nobody to kind of confide into, nobody to bounce off of. I know that they had youth goalkeepers in training, and that's who was on the subs bench, but there's kind of nobody that you can look to who's maybe experienced the same in this kind of weird league that is the SWPL, and that, you know, you can go winning one week and then the next minute you're playing a full-time team and getting beat 13-0. It's tough. So I think it was really important that they brought Jen in for Annalisa to kind of learn from, and also on the kind of on the pitch as well, because like you say, it's been quite clear what she's brought to the squad as well.
Yeah, and a few other additions from January onwards. So at the time that Jenny joined the team, she was also joined by defender Lewis Edwards and midfielder Keely Banfield, both of whom have seen reasonably decent spells of action on and off throughout the season since. And then more recently, forward Adele Lindbeck, who's come from Norway. And Adele in particular, I remember the one thing I instantly noticed the first time I saw her play was that she is absolutely rapid and brings an element of not an unreasonable amount of ability and talent to go along with that, but the pace was something that stood out in particular for me, which gave a kind of an additional dynamic up front that we maybe didn't have as much of beforehand. So good additions across the piece.
I think so, yeah. I think Keely and Lois, Lois has obviously missed a few games recently because she's been out with injury, which is obviously unfortunate. But yeah, I think, you know, story of Aberdeen season really, that they bring in players and then unfortunately they pick up an injury. But she's one that I think they've kind of had to watch a wee bit because this is her first season back, having done her ACL as well. So
as we've just discussed, yes.
yeah. So but no, she looked quite good. Kind of before she got injured, Keely as well. Keely's played every game since she's come in. I think the two of them have maybe taken a wee bit of time to adapt. I think Lewis has obviously come from Watford and has come through the ranks. I think she came through the ranks at Chelsea. Keely's come from Bridgewater United, which is the fourth tier down in England, but she came through the ranks at Bristol. So they've both got decent kind of levels of background. But I think the Scottish game is quite different to what they're used to in terms of, I think, just when, kind of what we were saying there against, you know, one minute you can be playing against a Celtic, a Glasgow City, a Rangers, where you're not going to see a lot of the ball, it's going to be very different, and then the next minute you're playing against Hamilton, two very different teams. So I think they've taken a wee bit of time to adapt to kind of the demands of the Scottish game and kind of the level of it, and the varying levels of it as well. And but I think, yeah, I think they've both been good additions. I think Adele, yeah, I think what you said there is hit the nail on the head again. She's so fast. I think it was the first game that she played. It was the 2-1 defeat to Rangers, which, you know, Aberdeen were quite unlucky actually not to get something out of. I think that was her first game. She came on as a substitute, and, you know, she came on probably, you know, she's from Norway. I know she was down at Charlton last, but I don't know how much she knows about kind of Scottish football and Rangers, kind of the players that they've got. But she came on, and I just remember like running past Nicola Doherty, and I was just like, yeah, she's going to be something good. And I think she has shown that. I think, again, she's maybe taken some time to adapt to Scotland and what you maybe can and can't do. I think she's so keen to be on the ball and to kind of just burst forward and beat her man, which she's done. I think you've seen it against Spartan. She took on about four players and just went past them as if they weren't even there. But then the kind of final bit has not quite clicked with Adele maybe as much as she would have liked and Aberdeen would have liked. So, but I think she's been class. I think I can't remember who I was having this conversation with, but I think she's probably been one of Aberdeen's kind of most quality additions in terms of the kind of raw talent that she's got. But hopefully now, you know, there's 9 games left that she can really kind of kick on now and show more of what she can do, because I think, I've been quite impressed with all three of them so far, but especially Adele.
Yeah, so as you say, 9 games left before the end of the season, and before we maybe project forward to what we could expect for the end of this season and maybe beyond, I thought it'd be good maybe just take a moment of reflection on what's been achieved so far. When you reported in the aftermath of the Spartans game, you'd highlighted just how stark a contrast it's been in terms of the fortunes of the team compared to at this point last season, or indeed towards the end of last season. So I think when we reflect back to, although Aberdeen ended up in what ended up being quite a worthy ninth place overall in the league, it was for long periods of time fraught with the spectre of potentially dropping into the relegation playoff place. And I think it was an injury time Bailey Hutchison goal in the last home game of the season against Dundee United before it was mathematically mathematically out of the woods with just a game to go. But you'd mentioned in your post-match report that with 9 games left to go, we're sitting on 28 points, which is only 2 short of the full season tally from the previous season. So some very definite, objective, tangible evidence of the team having performed better, or at least gotten better, tangible results as the outcome of that. When you reflect back on the pre-split fixtures, the 22 games that preceded that, have there been any particular highlights in terms of games or performances from you that you've reflected back on and thought, yeah, that was a real sign of a team that's come on leaps and bounds from where it was the previous season?
I think it was probably at the start of the season, to be fair. Was it 3-0 down at Spartans? I think that's one of the kind of best games that they've had all season. And I think Clint, I remember speaking about it with him just before the first post-split game, and he kind of had mentioned that as well. So I think it was quite clear to begin with kind of how different this team was going to be and under him, and kind of the influence that he'd been able to have already in such a short space of time. I think, and I think, you know, he's not been afraid to say it either. I think that maybe those first 5 or 6 games were, I think, did they win 4 out their opening 6, or their, it was something like that, that it was maybe not a true reflection of how the season was going to pan out, and that they maybe, not that they started too good, but, you know, it was really positive, and kind of people maybe got ahead of themselves a wee bit and how the season would pan out. Obviously nobody would have expected the injury problems and kind of the squad depth that issues that would come after. But I think I think they've been definitely better consistently. I think that start to the season was really good and showed kind of how good this Aberdeen team could be. I think there has been spells where they've not quite reached the potential, whether that's due to other factors or not, but I think I think they've got the same number of wins now that they had last season, like you said, 2 points behind the last season's tally with 9 games to go. So there has definitely been improvements, and I think it is important to remember as well, there's obviously been change in the league. Last season they were dealing with, you know, Manders leaving, 2 Manders that the squad obviously had worked with for quite some time. Gavin Beath had obviously been fairly new, but Emma had coached some of those girls since they were 13 or 14, so, yeah, you know, a really big loss in that kind of regard, a circumstance that none of them probably had to deal with before, especially kind of the level of the league now as well, to kind of have to still do your job essentially, or, you know, whether you're getting paid for it or not, but do the job on the pitch, and all having to deal with that kind of mental side of it and that factor for the first time was probably quite tough. But yeah, I think this season, it's, again, you can see the progress that's been made. The league is a bit different this season in terms of, you know, different characters and different teams have made different sorts of progress and whatever. So I think it's important to remember the context of the league and the split. Obviously, last season was fairly new. This season, it's the second time, so Aberdeen can know what to expect a wee bit. So I think every season there's been a wee bit of kind of not a caveat, but you must remember this, you know, kind of must remember that wee bit of context. But I think, yeah, there's definitely been progress over the course of the season. But for me, I think it was quite clear from the beginning, even if it doesn't tell the true story of the Aberdeen season, that those first five games under Clint were quite obvious that, you know, if things really kind of click, which they have done, so be it. There's been injuries, that this could really be a different Aberdeen team, and it's interesting how things maybe could have been different if those injuries hadn't happened, and how the season might have been panned out differently. But I think, yeah, those first five games, and like I said, that win down at Spartans early on was maybe kind of an indicator of how this season might go compared to last.
Yeah, you're absolutely right to go back to those first five games, and, you know, just how positive a start that was compared directly to, you know, not getting a win for the first number of games the previous season. So it was night and day from 12 mm-hmm. months ago. And even that very first win, home game against Motherwell, a team that finished above them last season, and I think a team that most people looked at the start of the season, that I think most people would have anticipated that would have said that they would have thought Motherwell was a better team than Aberdeen, and would have probably fancied Motherwell to finish above them at the end of the season. Now that may still be the case, although Aberdeen are seventh, I think they're only 6 points ahead of Motherwell, and I think realistically they'll be their toughest challenge if they want to hold on to, you know, top of Group B, as it were, towards the end of the season. But I think just right from the very beginning, that was a game that I think a lot of people identified as a really tough fixture right from the very beginning, and to record a 3-2 win. And it was in many ways maybe a more convincing win than the final mm-hmm. score reflected, because again, Motherwell came into it with a couple of goals late in the game. The other thing that I've found really noticeable, so some of the more enjoyable games I've found towards the tail end of the season, but the tail end of the pre-split fixtures, a couple of games that stood out. I was along at the game that was rearranged to Cormac Park against Montrose, where, although I suppose, again, I think a game that a lot of people would have looked at and they would have maybe fancied Aberdeen to win at home, but the weather conditions were pretty awful. Well, I say pretty awful. Somebody told me they're actually great conditions for playing football. It just happened to be that it'd be sub-zero temperatures. they found themselves, again, a game that maybe a lot of people would have fancied them to win. They found themselves behind quite a chunk into the second half, and there was a lot of character in the team that I thought that led them to come back in the game and turn that around to a 2-1 win. And then the real standout in recent times, the 3-1 down to Dundee United at home, and then completely turned it around with topping it off with an injury time winner. I think Ailey Shore in injury time that came up with the winner. And again, for me, it was such a clear contrast in how Aberdeen had performed in those games from 12 months ago, because if anything, I think there was always the talent and the ability in the team, but it's always been a very, very young team over the piece compared to other teams in the SWPL. And I think a season ago, again, maybe with a season less, a season younger, a season of less experience, so a lot of the time Aberdeen actually got to very good starts, were finding themselves ahead in a lot of these games, but as the game wore on, maybe the superior fitness, or, you know, with the older players, with and the know-how, they were getting themselves back in the game. We were ended up maybe drawing or losing games that we were actually leading a lot of times. And this time round, it's been quite heartening that a lot of the time it's actually been the other way around, where they've had to face early adversity and they've actually managed to turn it around.
Yeah, no, I think this season, the kind of character of the team, not that you've ever been able to question it, but I think, yeah, it's what you say. I think it's maybe just experience. I think they can see out games a wee bit better now. I think we're still to see that maybe against the top teams. I think, you know, I wasn't at the Glasgow City game. I was off on annual leave that week. But I think just kind of a result like that, they go in at halftime. I think, you know, they get to maybe 20, 25 minutes. It's 0-0. And then it's halftime. It's 4-0. Come back 4-1. I think then they had a really good chance to go 4-2, but ends up 8-1. I think there's still that kind of, against the professional teams, the full-time teams, there's still maybe a thing about mindset, is that you know, those games are obviously more difficult and they're more mentally challenging because you're up against it in every way. But against, you know, you mentioned the Montrose and the Dundee United games, I think, you know, those are moments, again, that if you're losing those games, teams that you're expected to beat, and they're quite important games as well, because that's obviously where you're going to see most of your points coming from, is those kind of teams in and around you. To be down, you know, especially 3-1 against Dundee United, it would be very easy to throw in the towel and to kind of, you know, lose a rag a wee bit and not turn out with a 4-3 win. But I think, yeah, I think they've really bought into what Clint wants to do. They really play for him. They really play for each other and kind of what they want to do. And that obviously helps in that they're in a much more positive position this season than they were last. You know, they're trying to be best of the rest. They're trying to kind of cement seventh. Last season, there was obviously that pressure of until that last, you know, it was the final home game of the season, the penultimate game of the season is when they managed to secure a place in the division. So I think that comes with a different kind of pressure as well. So even though, you know, it's the same kind of opposition that they're managing to kind of get these great wins against, the kind of context and the background that they're coming from are being different. But I think, yeah, I think, you know, that win against Dundee United, I think as soon as it went 3-2 in the second half, I thought, oh, they're going to get something from this. I never doubted that they would lose it by that point. And then obviously, you know, they get 3-3, and then, yeah, I think it was almost the last kick of the ball that they got the winner. And I was sitting thinking before that went in, they just need 5 more minutes because it was coming. You could feel it, and thank God they got it, because it was a really good win and they deserved it. So I think, yeah, the character in the squad has been really good. And I think it's a testament to the players because they're all so young. You know, they really are so young, even the more experienced players. You know, we've mentioned Hannah Stewart. I think she's 27. She's their most senior player. But other than that, it's like Chloe Gover and Ailey Shore, who I think Chloe Gover is maybe 23, 24, Ailey's 21. They're fair enough that they've played here for 3 seasons in the top flight now, but in any other context, if that was in the men's game or if they played for Rangers or Celtic or Glasgow City, you would probably look to them as your youth players. You wouldn't call them your experienced players. And it's, you know, it's obviously a good thing that they're at Aberdeen and they've been able to get these opportunities in their career so young. And that'll put them in really good stead for whatever the future holds for them. But I think, yeah, the character has always been there. But I think now that everything's coming together in the puzzle, you know, all the pieces are coming together, and that character has really shone through over the course of this season.
Maybe finishing off with a couple of questions here, I guess, but in relation to now where Aberdeen women are now and where they may aspire to be in immediately the next couple of months, but maybe then looking forward. So as we were saying, where the team sits right now, they're in seventh place, or top of Group B, with a 6-point lead on Motherwell. So obviously the target will be to try and solidify that position towards the end of the season. It's a good position that they're in at the moment, but I don't think anyone's taking anything for granted, because again, when I think you can sometimes be fooled into thinking you think about the top bottom half split in relation to the men's game, and that comes obviously a lot later in the season, where you've already had probably kind of 5/6 of your season out of the way, whereas, you know, in this regard, there's still quite a chunk of the season to go. 9 games is an awful lot of games, and 6 points is a handy lead to have over Motherwell. But I think everyone would probably accept that would be a really challenging outcome to try and stay ahead of a team that I think, again, Motherwell have a lot of senior of experienced and seasoned players in their team, and I think they would have been expecting to be potentially battling out in the top six at this stage rather than being in the bottom six. So would you be feeling confident right now that Aberdeen could hold out in that seventh place given the games still to go?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, it's not an impossible task to kind of cement that seventh place and to stay there the entire split. I know that one of the goals that they've kind of set is their home games, to kind of make Balmoral Stadium as much as a fortress as they can, and kind of win all their games at home. You know, that they've beaten every team at least once. You know, they did the triple over Spartans already. They've obviously got to play them at Ainslie Park still to go. But yeah, I think, you know, the kind of maybe momentum is going to maybe be a big part of it, in that, you know, if they can win those home games, that's great. But also, you know, I think all it would maybe take is a couple defeats against these teams that, you know, Aberdeen are this kind of same level of, that you would worry that things maybe spiral a bit, just maybe with kind of the pressure, but you know, you want to kind of solidify seventh, and if you kind of, you can't become complacent, is maybe what I'm trying to say, that Aberdeen kind of have to kind of remain focused on the kind of task at hand. But I don't think they will become complacent. You know, like, Clint isn't that kind of guy that is going to let them do that. But yeah, I don't see any reason why they can't kind of finish seventh and probably do it in quite a fashion as well. Like I mentioned about Spartans, you know, they obviously went on an unbeaten run of the split last season, so I mean, definitely have the quality to kind of finish seventh and give themselves maybe a real platform for next season as well.
Yeah, and that comes to my final question, what platform the team might have provided itself for next season. So you had alluded earlier to that kind of five-year plan for the club, that we're now probably more than halfway through. What do you think is realistic in terms of the progression of the club going forward? Because at the moment, and although obviously we do have a number of players on semi-professional contracts, and there is a commitment from the club, or at least has been over the last few seasons, to keep going in that direction, towards having more players on professional contracts, but there is a gulf when you come to the what are effectively the fully professional outfits for Rangers, Celtic, Glasgow City, and even indeed the likes of Hibernian and Hearts. And I think it is something where you can't really underestimate to people when you try and explain just the gulf in the resources that we're dealing with compared to those kind of top five clubs. So in the immediate horizon, you'd probably look at a team like, for me, the team in the season so far has been Partick Thistle, what Brian Graham and coaching staff there, and of course the first and foremost the players have achieved there has been absolutely fantastic, because not only have they made it into the top six, they got there with quite a bit of room to spare, and have actually been a lot of times quite competitive. They've been kind of nipping in the heels of the likes of Hibs and Hearts. And also obviously while there weren't any domestic league fixtures last weekend, that was because they were having the Sky Sports Cup taking place, and Partick Thistle managed to get to the final of that as well. In the immediate future, is that a target which is aspirational for Aberdeen? Is that something we could realistically be looking at? Because again, we maybe were a number of seasons ahead of target going back to the very first season in top flight, where they did actually manage to get into the top half of the table. But in the first instance, is it a realistic aspiration to maybe be challenging to get to breach into that top six, and maybe even a successful cup run? And then looking further forward, what are the realistic ultimate goals over the next couple of seasons in relation to where the club could be? Because I think we do have to be realistic in relation to, you know, where we are compared with, at the very least, the kind of top three teams in the country. And for me, even to get at the level of a Hearts and Hibs would probably require a lot more additional development behind the scenes and in terms of kind of the additional squad recruitment that would be needed to be undertaken in order to get to that level.
Yeah, I think you mentioned Partick Thistle. They've obviously made great progress over the last couple of seasons especially, but I think, yeah, you mentioned Hearts. I think Hearts are a perfect example of taking a leap of faith and that kind of commitment to their women's team to invest year upon year, and the progress that they've made has been quite clear. You know, Hearts, if it hadn't been for COVID, I think they would have been relegated, whereas now they've got, you know, their third, fourth kind of consistently over the last couple of seasons have improved. You know, I remember when Aberdeen first came up two seasons ago, Hearts were not that impressive in terms of what they are now, and then the next season it was a completely different team, but you know it was the same manager that was there, but she'd been given the resources and she'd been given the kind of players that she needed to kind of do her job. I think Aberdeen kind of have to look at that a little bit. I think you can't fall behind. You have to consistently make progress because the game is moving so fast. Fair enough, in Scotland, it's behind where it is down south and, you know, other areas across Europe, but it's still making progress. And even within that league, you know, we mentioned Partick Thistle, we mentioned Hearts, even Hibs, you know, Grant Scott coming back. They've changed their model a wee bit. It's every team's making progress. You know, teams like Montrose, they have players on contracts now as well. So it's every team is making progress. You cannot fall behind. You have to make something year upon year. So fair enough, the first season that Aberdeen at the tail end of that put their first five players on paid contracts. Now they've got a full-time manager in. Obviously this season it's been announced that they've got an academy, so that kind of planning for the future, that pathway is another step in the development, but there just needs to be progress season upon season. I don't think the answer straight away is let's go full-time, let's just do it, because Aberdeen, we've kind of mentioned in terms of the squad, they're maybe in a more difficult position to kind of have the kind of level and experience of players in locally. You know, we've kind of seen it, so that's why Clint has had to go down south and look at players like Keely and Lois, and obviously brought Faye in from Liverpool, and that's kind of come from his contacts in the women's game in England. But I think it just needs to be progress upon season, and I don't quite know what that looks like. I don't know what the next step is, but I think there always has to be something. You can't just be like, oh, well, we've got our full-time manager in now. We've got, you know, 9 or 10 players on semi-pro contracts. It has to be, right, what's the next thing? And all these little things, they're not little things, obviously, but all these bits by bits, they add up, and then you can kind of be like, okay, so now we can go for top six. I don't think the way Aberdeen are now is that, fair enough, they could finish in the top six. That's not impossible, but I don't think they're a top six team, and that I don't think season upon season you would expect them to be there. So I think, yeah, to just kind of reiterate again, I think it is just constant progress, whether that's, you know, next season, whether, I don't know, Clint brings in more staff that are full-time, or, you know, players are made full-time. It just kind of has to be more of the same, I think, in terms of the progress. And it's just having, I think, partly it is a bit of a leap of faith. I think, you know, you have, whether the club feel ready to do it or not, I don't think you can kind of ask yourselves that, because you just kind of have to look at the bigger picture. If we don't do it now, then when do we do it? And if you're asking yourself that, then I think it's a case of, oh no, it's going to be too late. So if Aberdeen want to have, you know, a successful team that play in the top flight, and they want to kind of really lay the foundations there, then it just has to be progress. It has to be progress all the time, whether that's imminently or planning for the long-term future. It just has to be more, season upon season, I think.
Absolutely. So on that aspirational and positive outlook, we will wrap things up there. So my thanks once again to Sophie Goodwin for joining us. Thanks once again, Sophie.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
It's been a pleasure. And until next time, come on you Reds. We'll be right back.